An epic rematch between New Zealand and South Africa. But can you believe it? The officials interfere again. Meanwhile, the Wallabies pull off a last-second shocker in Argentina. And finally, it was yet another wet weekend of action in the NPC. The September 2, 2024 edition of the Rugby Report starts right now. Hey everybody, and welcome to the September 2, 2024 edition of the Rugby Report, your weekly review and preview pod. My name is Dwayne Burkhard, and in this episode, we will cover the weekend action in the Rugby Championship, including the match between the best two teams in the world, and the shocker in South America. And then, in New Zealand, we will talk about why fans are openly asking if they should start building an ark. But let's begin with the big story, New Zealand and South Africa, the All Blacks and the Springboks, the two best rugby teams on earth in a rematch of the 2023 Rugby World Cup Grand Final, one of the most controversy-marred matches in history. Fortunately, for most of this game, it was nothing less than one of the best, most competitive, and most exciting international test matches ever. At the end of the first half, the All Blacks were clinging to a one-point lead, 12-11, which was, of course, in a bit of historical irony, the final score of last year's grand final, with the scores reversed. The All Blacks seemed to have the upper hand all throughout this game, and early in the second half, Jordy Barrett stepped in front of a pass and then sprinted 50 meters the other way, and suddenly, the All Blacks led by 8. But regardless of whether you think the Springboks should be defending world champions or not, everyone can agree that they and the All Blacks are definitely the top two, and they played like it. The Boks fought back and stayed close. And then it happened. In the 67th minute, All Blacks backup prop Ofa Tuongafasi was sent off with a yellow card for an infraction that many viewers, including this one, felt should have merely been a penalty. And whether the Springboks are best or second best in the world, the one thing you can't do is give them a one-man advantage with just over 10 minutes to play. The Springboks leaped on the advantage, scoring twice in the last 10 minutes, turning a 6-point deficit into a 4-point advantage and securing a huge win. Full-time score, New Zealand 27, South Africa 31. Now to be clear, while there are plenty of folks online today talking about this yellow card, it would be ridiculous for anyone to even imply that it compares to the horrific officiating in last year's World Cup Grand Final. For most observers, including me, the yellow card that probably did change the outcome of this game was simply a judgment call that involved a bit of an overreaction. And the fact is that, once again, both of these teams played just plain spectacularly well. And it is easy to argue that both of them deserve to win. That said, New Zealand does now have to face a pretty cold, hard reality. In two of their last three games, their reserve players have been given a lead and have been unable to defend it. And in the one game that they were able to hold on and win, they were given a much bigger lead and they still managed to lose ground. To be clear, the All Blacks absolutely are, and deserve to be ranked as one of the very best teams in the world. But they've got a problem somewhere between numbers 16 and 23. And whatever and wherever that problem is, they need to fix it. Later in the day, we move to Argentina, where the recently very impressive Pumas hosted the Australian Wallabies. The Wallabies arrived in desperate need of a win, but could they do it in Argentina? At night? In bad weather? It seemed like a tall order for a team that has struggled mightily of late. But as I have said, Australia has been down, but it is a mistake to conclude that they are out. And Argentina may have done just that. The Pumas burst out to a 10-0 lead in the first quarter of the game, but the Wallabies fought back, and Jake Gordon finished a great drive in the 27th minute to close the gap to 3. The Pumas added a couple of penalties to make it a 16-7 game, but they just couldn't slam the door on the Wallabies' offense. And in the 51st minute, Bobby V slams across the line, and suddenly, It's just a two-point game. The Wallabies added a penalty to take their first lead 17-16, but it was their defense that made the difference on this night as the Pumas roared back down the field but could not score and had to settle for a penalty and a two-point lead, 19-17. The final minutes were ticking down and the Wallabies went driving for the winning score, but the Pumas defense held as well. But a penalty seconds before the full-time hooter gave the Wallabies a chip shot chance to steal the game on the road, and they did. The full-time score in a shocker in Argentina was Argentina 19, Australia 20. Now, these same two groups of teams will meet again this coming weekend, and I would not recommend missing one second of it. Now, before we get on our rain gear and move to coverage of Round 4 in the NPC, let's remember that Round 3 technically didn't end until Wednesday night, where, as I predicted, the Hawke's Bay Magpies did go into Canterbury and steal one on the road. But for those of you who, like me, watched this game, it was not a walk in the park for the Magpies, despite the fact that it definitely looked like it should have been. The Birdmen of the Bay flew into Canterbury and seemed to dominate possession and position for most of this game, but Canterbury's defense came up with stop after stop, and after a critical error by Hawke's Bay that Canterbury capitalized on, in a moment where it felt like the score should be something like 21-3 Magpies, it was instead all knotted up at 10. And the game started to feel like one of those contests where the underdog might be able to pull it out. They did not. But hopefully the game served as a wake-up call for the Magpies, who escaped with the win. Full-time score, Canterbury 21, Hawke's Bay 27. And that made me 18-5 through round 3. Now, the wet weekend that was round 4 began with a drizzle on Friday with the Battle of the Lands as the Southland Stags galloped into Northland to face the Tanifa in what, early on, looked like it was going to be a very competitive back-and-forth match between two pretty evenly matched teams. And then it wasn't. As late in the first half, the Tanifa simply went wild, scoring 19 unanswered points in short order and taking a 26-7 lead into the break. Well, I don't know what the Southland Stags coach said at halftime, but I sure hope that someone recorded it, because in the second half, the Stags defense didn't give up a single point, and on offense, they just kept coming. What started as an effort to just get back to respectability suddenly became a, hey, this game might not be over yet kind of game, including a just plain ridiculous try in the 58th minute after the craziest bounce off of a box kick that I have ever seen. And before you knew it, suddenly the game, which was a blowout for Northland at the half, was on the line, and it was Southland with all the momentum. And in the 73rd minute, they completed a 24-0 run and the most spectacular come-from-behind win in the NPC in years. Full-time score was Northland 26, Southland 31. Saturday's action began without rain falling in North Harbor as the Harbor Masters faced off against the county's Monaco Steelers. But it was the Steelers who came to the game with a chip on their shoulder, and before Harbor knew what hit them, they were down 14-0. They did get back in the game and evened up the score, but again, the Steelers seemed just plain pissed off for this entire game and scored 17 more before Harbor saw the try line again. But Harbor was at home, and they would not go away. And it was their turn then to go on a scoring binge, scoring 19 straight and taking their first lead of the game with just 7 minutes to play. And it looked like the Steelers, who have often played so well and well enough to win this season, but have just not been able to buy a break, were gonna get snake bit yet again on the road. But not today. With less than two to play, the Steelers burst through the Harbor defense, retook the lead, and held on, and I mean held on, after a furious last-second surge by Harbor, and they get their first win of the season. Full-time score, North Harbor 33, Counties 36. Now, for those who listened to last week's podcast, you know that I've now started the weekend 0-2. And this next game almost left me starting 0-3 on a round of my predictions for the first time since years before this podcast even existed. The suddenly streaking Otago Razorbacks stormed into Taranaki to take on the defending champion Bulls. The Bulls scored first, but it was Otago that crossed the try line for the first time in this game. The teams traded kicks and made it 8-6, but Otago earned a penalty right before the break, and that led to them having an 11-6 lead at the break. Otago's defense was just swarming in the opening minutes of the second half, but a pair of penalties gave the lead back to the Bulls, 12-11. But minutes later, it was the Razorbacks who again dove across the try line, retaking the lead 18-12, and it was pretty clear that the defending champs were in trouble. And then, halfway through the second half, Otago's aggressive defense finally went too far. And that meant a yellow card, and just like the All Blacks, the one thing you can't do when you're on the road playing the defending champs is give them a one-man advantage. The Bulls, of course, wasted no time in taking advantage of the, well, advantage, scoring a try and closing the gap to one, and then, in the 68th minute, backup front rower, wily veteran, and ageless wonder Ricky Riccitelli barreled his way across the line, and it was 22-18 Bulls. The Razorbacks had their chances to pull off the miracle win, but a frankly boneheaded play in the 74th minute resulted in yet another yellow card for Otago, and that was that. Full-time score in the rain, Taranaki 22, Otago 18. Game 4 of the weekend takes us over to Waikato, where the Mulus returned home to face Auckland. And I think we now have to say out loud, what on earth has gone wrong in Auckland? I don't know, but I do know that this game did not go well for the boys in blue and white. The Mulus were in charge of this game from the opening kick. And speaking of ageless wonders, since I just used that phrase a moment ago to describe Riccitelli, how about Aaron Cruden in this game? Making ridiculous conversion kicks, picking off passes, and winning a 60-meter foot race to score a try on his own. Cruden may be nearing the end of his career, but holy crap, wow, is he going out with a bang. Anyway, the Mulus led by a frankly shocking 32-7 at the half. On their way to a convincing win at home, the full-time score was Waikato 39, Auckland 21. Now finally, on Saturday, we traveled down to Blenheim, where the rain didn't just get heavier, it got violent. The storms were so bad down south that they knocked out power to the stadium and delayed the start of the game between the Tasman Mako and the Bay of Plenty Steamers. The Steamers had just been steamrolled by Otago, while Tasman was coming off of a blowout win in near-flash flood conditions at Counties. Well, the rain was falling again for the Mako men, and for the second week in a row, Tavatava Nawai started the scoring, and for the second week in a row, the fish just swam away with the game from there. Now, this is not to say that the Steamers played badly at all. In fact, for the second week in a row, they looked good on offense too. And for the second season in a row, they remain my favorite team to watch on offense, consistently playing a high-octane, high-energy, unselfish, and just plain fun game to watch with lots of passing and great ball movement. No, to be clear, the Steamers, despite the slow start to scoring, were still in this game, even though they trailed 70-8 in the half. But in the second half, as the rain continued to just pour down, well, holy mackerel, the Mako had a whale of a game. And the full-time score was Tasman 34, Bay of Plenty 15. And just like that, I go from 0-2 on the weekend to 3-2. Sunday's action began in Rangirua, where the men in red and black were probably still stinging from the Wednesday night game that they let get away. Still, there was quite the crowd for Canterbury at their home away from home as they welcomed the Wellington Lions. Sadly for Canterbury, however, the Lions were coming off a game where they were less than their best, and they were determined to do better. And they did. In fact, the Lions jumped out to a 31-0 lead by halftime. And it wasn't like Canterbury, who had played amazing defense against the undefeated Magpies only a few days earlier, were playing especially badly. No, Wellington was just that good in this game. Canterbury did get its act together, and they did play much better in the second half. But when you spot your opponents a 31-point lead, well, you're not going to win a lot of those games, and they didn't. Full-time score, Canterbury 21, Wellington 46. And finally this weekend, the Manawatu Turbos returned home to face the undefeated Hawke's Bay Magpies, and even though the Turbos' offense again showed some genuine signs of life, and they are playing better this year, the game went exactly the way you, and I, and everyone else thought it would. I got nothing else to say here, folks. Full-time score, Manawatu 26, Hawke's Bay 38. A reminder that Round 4 does not end until Wednesday, when Waikato will meet, and I have predicted will defeat, the Northland Tanifa. For those keeping track, as I noted, I began the weekend 0-2, but then I went on a 5-0 run from there, bringing my predictions to 5-2 on the weekend, and 23-7 overall. Round 5 will begin on Friday night in Rotorua, where the Steamers will host the Turbos in a game where, well, frankly, I wouldn't want to be the Turbos. The Steamers will be steamed after having dropped 2 straight on their South Island road trip, and while the Turbos have rediscovered how to score, and that is important, until they figure out how to stop their opponents from scoring, they will continue to struggle. And as I have noted, the Steamers are not having trouble scoring. Steamers win. Saturday's action will begin in Auckland, where a shockingly winless Auckland squad will take on North Harbour. Harbour came millimeters away from a massive comeback win last week, and they will probably come into this game very unhappy. Auckland will be at home, but right now, it's hard to see what they're going to do, even in a rivalry game like this, to change their fortunes. North Harbour wins. Next up, the Lions return to Porirua, site of their scare against the Turbos a couple of weeks ago, to face a much-improved Southland Stags side. Now everyone knows that I love the Stags. Come on, we all love the Stags. But I have to go with Wellington this game. Although, if the Lions go into this game underestimating the Stags the way they clearly underestimated the Turbos, watch out. But I don't think that's happening. Lions win. Game 3 on Saturday is a big South Island rivalry game as Otago returns home to face Canterbury. Now, normally, despite my longtime affection for the Razorbacks, I'd have to pick Canterbury in this game. But given the way these two teams have played their last few games, I am going to go out on a limb here, and I'm taking the Razorbacks in this one. It's yet another upset win for Otago here at home. Otago wins. Finally, on Saturday, it is easily the game of the week and possibly a grand final preview as the Hawke's Bay Magpies return home to face the Tasman Mako. Now, both of these teams are undefeated and both are playing lights-out rugby so far this season. But at home, I have to give the edge to the Magpies. They will squish the fish for the first time this season. Magpies win. Sunday's action starts in Yarrow Stadium, where the defending champion Taranaki Bulls will host the Waikato Mulus. The Mulus are improving and coming off a big win against Auckland, but the Bulls are not Auckland, and they will probably want to show that the game against the Razorbacks was a fluke. Watch out for this one, but I still think the Bulls find a way to win at home. Bulls win. And finally, the last game of the weekend, though not the round, takes us back to Navigation Home Stadium, where I am still interested in any of the homes overlooking the place as the County's Monaco Steelers take on the Northland Tanifa. Both teams have struggled, but the Steelers are finding their way after their stunning first win last weekend. And they will make it 2 in a row, and they will win this game. Steelers win. Now, Round 5 will end a week from Wednesday when Otago welcomes Wellington to Forsyth Barr Stadium in Dunedin. And in that game, I am going to take the Wellington Lions. Now let's look to the women's side this weekend. As predicted, Taranaki's woes did continue as they got pummeled by the Otago Spirit, 60-17. Ow. Next, in the Battle of the Bays, the Volcanics were hot, and they did take down the Tui, 47-26. Later on, the Waikato women crushed the Auckland Storm, 65-17. Ow again. And finally, I went 4-0 on the day as the relentless and apparently unstoppable Manawa 2 Cyclones went fishing with dynamite and squished the Ladyfish in Tasman, 55-17. On Sunday, Wellington beat North Harbour, 36-21. And finally, capping off a rare perfect week in predictions for the ladies, the county's Monaco Heat beat the Northland women, 35-26. Looking ahead to the ladies' round 5, Auckland will host but be toasted when the Heat come to town. Counties wins there. Northland returns home, but it won't matter as they fall to Canterbury. Next up, Tasman and Taranaki will play a game where, frankly, someone's got to win. And as much as I'd like to see Taranaki get a win, I don't see it here. Tasman wins at home. Next up is almost certainly the ladies' game of the week as the Otago Spirit hosts the Wellington Pride. The math says that the Pride wins this one, but I'm going to go with my gut and say that Otago's going to win this one in an upset. Saturday's action ends in Palmerston North, where the Manawa 2 Cyclones, who, again, haven't lost a regular season game in years, will go home to face the Hibiscus, and that game will be true to their mascots in that when a cyclone meets a flower, the cyclone wins, and the flower is usually torn to pieces. Cyclones win. Round 5 ends on Sunday with a game that also might be a game of the week when the Waikato women host the Hawke's Bay Tui. And I'm going to go with Waikato here, but don't be surprised if this one isn't closer than people think. And that's it, folks. That is all the more time we have for this, the September 2 edition of the Rugby Report. Thank you for listening. Please do hit that subscribe button and tell all of your rugby friends about us. Until next time, I will be out looking for a new doctor. You see, I told him last week that I was worried that I'm shrinking. He told me not to worry. Said I just had to learn to be a little patient. See you next time. Bloopers. One of the most controversial... Hang on, I gotta move my thing here, and I need to take a drink. They did get back in the game and even opened... retook the lead and held... The suddenly streaking Otago... backup front rower, wily veteran, and ageless wonder Ricky Rich... what was that sound in my throat? Returned home to face the undefeated Hawke's Bay... Hawke's Bay? No, it's not Hawke's Bay. I apologize to everybody in the Hawke's Bay area. Here we go. I didn't say the last game of the round. Uh-oh. What's the last game of the round? We're gonna do it live! We'll do it live! Okay, hang on a second. I missed one. When Otago welcomes Wellington into... This episode of the Rugby Report is the 2024 copyrighted property of Narratives, LLC. It is intended for the free, private, and non-commercial use of its listeners only, and may not be rebroadcast or retransmitted, either in whole or part, without written permission. Please email info@narrativesllc.com for more information.